The Hokies are back in a bowl game. They'll head to Annapolis to play the Military Bowl, while Liberty makes a New Year's Six game. The undefeated ACC champion, they got left out of the college football playoff. We'll talk about all that and a whole lot more this week on Teal and Barber. Welcome to episode 128 of Teal and Barber, our Virginia Tech, UVA, and ACC sports podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods. I'm Mike Barber, ACC beat writer for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and joining me as always, my co-host, the 14-time Sports Writer of the Year and the Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, David Teal. How are you today, David?
Better than Mike Norvell, Mike.
Yeah, let's jump right into it because the biggest story in the ACC is the biggest sports story in the nation this morning, and that is the college football playoff rankings come out last night, David, and despite going undefeated, despite a couple of wins against SEC schools, Florida State didn't get a spot in the field. The committee saying that despite the win over Florida with its backup, despite the win in the ACC championship game with its third string quarterback, that the Seminoles simply aren't the same team without Jordan Travis. It's going to be Michigan, Washington, Texas, Alabama. The Longhorns and the Tide, David, each have a loss. So my question to you, did they get it right?
No, they didn't. Florida State should be in the playoff. Alabama should not be. Alabama lost to Texas. So Texas was going, if Alabama was getting in, Texas was getting in. Alabama lost at home to Texas by multiple scores, double-digit margin. It was not a fluke. Conversely, Alabama's win over Auburn in the regular season finale was a fluke. Now, I get recency bias. Did Alabama look better against Georgia on Saturday night in the SEC championship game than Florida State did against Louisville in the ACC title game? Yes. But Florida State was playing with its third-string quarterback, a third-string quarterback who, from all accounts, won't be starting in the bowl. Tate Rodemaker was in concussion protocol. He was 50-50. They went with safety, which they should have done, and he didn't play in the game. Almost certainly he will play in the bowl. On the same day that Auburn, with its ridiculous Hail Mary defense, gifted Alabama win, Florida State was winning in the swamp against Florida with Tate Rodemaker, winning by multiple scores. Did the committee have some kind of collective amnesia? Did the committee forget that Florida State beat LSU more handily than Alabama did? They really screwed this up.
Yeah, I don't get it. You know, the path of least resistance here, right, is to go with the undefeated team. You know, the SEC is going to bang on the table, sure, but the thing nobody can argue with is the undefeated team. And the other thing is Florida State, as I mentioned, they did all the things they're supposed to do in terms of scheduling, right? I mean, they played LSU on a neutral field and won. They played Florida on the road and won. Mm-hmm. They won with great defense. And it seems like the goal all along, you had to have an SEC team in. And then you mentioned, which I think was the linchpin of the whole problem here. Yeah, if you have to get an SEC team in, once Alabama beats Georgia, you also have to get Texas in because Texas beat Alabama.
Yes.
It becomes a package deal. And then you're kind of working backwards, looking to justify. I think for the committee, Jordan Travis's injury was an excuse to allow them to get Alabama into the playoff. But I don't see how it's right. Now, I would say, David, if you put Alabama and Florida State this weekend on a neutral field, who do you think wins that game?
On a neutral field, it depends on who's playing quarterback.
If I give you Rodemaker.
Okay, if Alabama is a favorite.
I think so, too. So it's the only part that I go back on in terms of if you're really trying to get the four best teams or the four teams playing the best football right now. But
right. And it's a great point you make. But how many times have we heard Boo Committee and other chairmen, Boo Corrigan and other committee chairmen say it's not our job to project? Okay. So if it's not your job to project, then don't do it. Don't say, oh, Alabama would give Michigan a better game than Florida State would. How do you know that? Alabama should have boat raced Auburn, which, oh, by the way, lost the previous week at home to New Mexico State by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, it's
so at Auburn, Alabama won by far fewer points than did New Mexico State. So,
yeah.
Come on here, people.
No, I'm with you. To me, it's two things. The other thing that it is that it weighs heavily, and it's always the case, and it's ESPN driven, but
yes,
this is such a quarterback centric mindset we have. Florida State might have the best defense in the nation. And why can't the best defense in the nation go win you a national title? It can. It certainly can. But because they're not putting up big points, that was held against them. Whose defense played better than Florida State's over the last 3 weeks?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's.
Exactly. And Mike, Florida State gained more yards on Saturday than Michigan did. And yeah. Michigan's the number one seed.
Yeah, so here's a hypothetical, and it's hard to do these, I know, but Iowa stunk on offense,
yes.
Stunk on offense, but it almost won all of its games. If Iowa had gone into the Big Ten title game with a loss and beat Michigan, would there have been any doubt that Iowa would have been in? I mean, if you think about it that way, if you take away their one of their two regular season losses or both of them, beat Michigan. Yes, they're horrible on offense, but people are going to say, okay, they earned it, their defense. I think Iowa would have been in, and the fact that Florida State doesn't get that consideration because at one point they were really good on offense and defense, to me, that seems silly.
Yeah. Here's another hypothetical, Mike. What if Jordan Travis had broken his leg Saturday near the end of the ACC championship game, maybe in the fourth quarter of a 30-10 win, where the committee didn't have any kind of data points or hadn't seen really Tate Rodemaker or anything like that, then what would the committee have done?
Yeah, and you and I talked about this, and I talked about the fact that I thought they'd need to score style points in their final two games. And I think you and I were probably both wrong, probably everyone was wrong, in the idea that we thought the fact that they had a couple of games to prove themselves worked in their favor. I think to your point, to that question you just asked me, I think it worked against them because they weren't impressive offensively. They still won. Their defense was still outstanding. They ran the ball with Trey Benson. But again, quarterback driven. I do wonder if Travis's injury had happened in that game, what do you do? I think it would have been harder for the committee to leave them out.
Yes.
I'll be honest. I think the committee has spent 3 weeks working on a justification for this ever since the Travis injury. And then they got everything they needed in terms of a lack of offensive production. But it just feels, I always say it this way. At the end, when you look at the teams you put in the playoff, did everybody have a chance to get in? Well, Alabama had a chance to get in, but they lost to Texas. Texas had a chance to get in, but they lost to Oklahoma. So those two teams had a chance on the field, didn't do it. Did Florida State have a chance to get in? I would argue no. What else could they have done? It seems like the committee went out of their way to screw this one up.
No, I really think they did. And Mike, college football, the postseason, it's become an entertainment product that essentially is based on status. And it's all about the SEC. You know, and Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, went on College Game Day Saturday, and he was arrogant even by his standards, you know, with his Sesame Street analogy and one thing is unlike the other and, you know, we're God's greatest gift.
Dave, what was the ACC's record against the SEC this year?
Right, 6-4.
Yeah.
The SEC was sub-500 against its Power 5 peers. I mean, give me a break. There are years when the SEC lords over this sport like few others ever have. Newsflash, this ain't one of those seasons. But apparently that memory or those memories lingered in that committee room.
Yeah, and I think everyone assumed that a one-loss ACC champion would be out, right?
Yes.
But if you finish the job and you go undefeated, to me, there's no question. You know, we're not talking about, you know, Liberty went undefeated. We'll talk about Liberty later. We're not talking about their strength of schedule. You know, Florida State played the ACC schedule it had. It played LSU and won. It played at Florida and won. It won the ACC title game. Those last two with backup and third string quarterbacks. To me, David, I got to be honest. To me, that's almost more impressive, right? Yeah. How good is this team? Well, against Florida in the swamp, against their rival, with a backup quarterback, they are still able to win. And in the ACC title game against Louisville with a third string quarterback, they're still, that just proves to me that this team was the real deal.
Yep. You're absolutely right. And you know, for Jordan Travis to go on social yesterday and apologize for the timing of his injury. I mean, that's what college football's postseason has wrought. Yeah. And let me push back on another narrative too, Mike. You know, some people have pointed out, and justifiably so, that the ACC was among the conferences that initially resisted expansion of the college football playoff from 4-12. And if the playoff had expanded this year, as many had wanted, we wouldn't be having this discussion. Florida State would not only be in, it would have earned an automatic, essentially an automatic bid as the champion of the ACC. But this wasn't a Jim Phillips decision, Jim being the commissioner of the league. If folks will remember back, two of the loudest coaches in opposition to the college football playoff expansion were Clemson's Dabo Swinney and North Carolina's Mack Brown, the league's two most accomplished head coaches. Were their views shared by their respective presidents, Jim Clements and Kevin Guskowitz? My suspicion is yes, that they took their cues from their coaches. And by the way, it was the presidents of the ACC who made the decision for the league to collectively resist the expansion and to delay it. So to put this all on Jim Phillips' plate strikes me as unfair.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, the alliance obviously was a misguided and doomed step. But as you said, you know, he's taking his direction from other places. And it's shocking to see it happen. Again, it shocks me because the easy thing to do here was to put the undefeated team in the field. Here's a question, David. If Florida State goes, and I don't know if they will, Georgia's a strong team. If Florida State goes and beats Georgia, could you see a situation where AP voters, coaching vote, go ahead and we, I mean, we used to have co-national champions when people couldn't decide. And I know it's not supposed to happen in the playoff era, but should Florida, this isn't UCF, right? UCF declared itself national champion largely as a gimmick to protest its exclusion from the process. Florida State, if it beats Georgia, I think has a legitimate claim to being the national champion. Do you think that's legitimate?
It depends on who plays, right? I mean, how many opt-outs might Georgia have? Because clearly an Orange Bowl against Florida State was not what the Bulldogs had in mind. And hey, you know, part of me feels for Georgia too. 29-game winning streak, two-time reigning national champion, and you lose in your title game by a field goal to Alabama, and you're out, and you're number six in the right. You fall from number one to number six.
Yeah, by losing on a neutral field to a team that the committee felt deserved to be in the playoff, that makes that bizarre. The fact that the committee says Florida State isn't the same team it was with Travis, but it's still better than Georgia, didn't seem to make any sense. And I'm not saying this should have happened, but if your contention is this team is no longer a contender without Jordan Travis, shouldn't they be like number eight or something? Yeah. Like it, the whole thing just seemed like a farce designed to, you know, you moved Alabama up. Now, how can you justify the rest of the spots? And very unsavory and I think very unfair. And you mentioned the idea that, you know, that Florida State Georgia game, while on paper is a whale of a ball game and a chance for either program to sort of show where they belong and who they really were, we'll see what kind of roster is actually available in that game, because outside of the college football playoff, teams are not fielding full strength rosters.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
All right, so how about a slightly less controversial and probably less headline grabbing bowl, Virginia Tech under Brent Pry, year two, they're back bowl eligible. They're going to play the Military Bowl in Annapolis, a familiar destination for them. They're going to face Tulane, which just lost its coach. Willie Fritz has gone and taken the job at Houston. David, how big a step is it for Brent Pry to have the Hokies in a bowl game? And what are kind of your reactions to this bowl matchup?
Well, it's a large step, Mike, as we talked about after the Commonwealth Cup game, for the Hokies to go from 1-6 in the ACC to 5-3, and from 3-8 overall to 6-6 overall is undeniable progress. And the Hokies' reward was a military bowl in Annapolis against the AAC runner-up. It's a tough matchup for Tech now. Tulane, you know, beat or lost to SMU home in the ACC title game, but the Green Wave's only other loss was to Ole Miss, which is a top 12 team, I guess, in the CFP. So difficult matchup for the Hokies, but one that I think is fan-friendly. You know, D.C. is a haven for Virginia Tech graduates. It's a familiar bowl. The Hokies have been there twice, going 1-1. But, you know, good on Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I think it's huge. And, you know, we hear coaches talk about, and I wonder if this is fair sometimes, but we hear coaches talk about how valuable those extra practices are. Yeah. And it seems to me that the NCAA rules have put you in a situation where, you know, in a sense, the rich get richer. And I'm not saying that 6-6 and going to a military bowl has you rich, but probably the programs that are not making bowl games need that development, yeah, that practice, yes, more. But I think for Brent Pry, that's a big part of this too, that any extra time he gets to spend with this team practicing, developing, just speeds up the process. And that's why I think this was so huge. It'd be really interesting to see the fans, because, David, they were great this year. Like, Tech fans coming off a bad year, low expectations, a bad start to the year. Tech fans were just outstanding. And we don't need to, you know, relitigate and bang on UVA fans for what they weren't, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a good showing for Tech fans in the Military Bowl. I know the Military Bowl was really excited to get Tech. In fact, their sort of their wet dream at night when they went to bed was to somehow pair JMU and Virginia Tech in a Military Bowl, is what I was told, which would have been very fan friendly for both sides. But I think there's a good chance that this is a very good way to end the year and a good springboard for Brent Pry and his program.
It'll be a better way to end the year if they win the game. Yeah. You know, if they get run, we might be having a different conversation. But you know, as we mentioned, you know, Tulane will sling it around, but without Willie Fritz, who knows how many of his staffers may accompany him to Houston. You know, leaving the Green Wave with a skeleton coaching crew, which is essentially what JMU is facing in its bowl against Air Force in the Armed Forces Bowl down in Texas, because Kurt Cignetti is off to Indiana and much of that staff has already left town with it.
Yeah, so I wanted you to walk us through that, because initially on the announcement, Cignetti implied he would be coaching the bowl game. I talked to somebody at JMU.
Mike, not only did he imply it, Jeff Bourne, the AD, said it.
Yeah,
said it out loud, said, well, I expect him to coach.
Which is odd to me, because if you have a new job and you're being paid, you should be on the job. Like, I like the idea. You know, Bronco did that too. He announced he was resigning, and he wasn't going anywhere else, which made it a little easier, but he wanted to coach the game. And I appreciate the loyalty aspect of it, but if you're Indiana, you've got to say, we just hired you as our coach, get to work.
But Bronco did it, Mike, when he left BYU.
Yeah.
Remember before he came to Virginia, he coached the Cougars in his bowl.
He was an odd duck.
Well, no, Mike, he is.
He remains an odd duck. But yeah, it is a very unusual setup. JMU will have its quarterback. Jordan McLeod said he'll play the game. And the chatter I've heard from people at JMU is that even guys who are entering the portal, even guys who want to follow Cignetti to Indiana or find somewhere else to play, JMU actually expects many of them to play in the bowl game. Now, that was the immediate aftermath of everything. It might be like the Cignetti coaching situation, where as we go further into the process, that changes. But the feeling or the vibe from some of the JMU players that I spoke with was, want to end the year the right way, had a very special season, would like to go play the program's first ever bowl and win the program's first ever bowl.
Yeah, well, Damian Wroblewski, who's the offensive line coach and is serving now as the acting head coach, he met with some of us on Zoom last night following the bowl announcements. And he said that he expects every healthy player on the roster to be available for the Dukes against Air Force. And it's a fascinating statistical matchup because of Air Force's triple option, which ranks second in the nation in rushing offense, while JMU in a landslide leads the nation in rushing defense.
Yeah, I think it's an intriguing game, and certainly intriguing just for the fact that, you know, for JMU, it's the first.
First one.
And so much conversation about where they would be. And you got to ask yourself, okay, if they were undefeated, what could this year have been if the NCAA had come through with the waiver so there wasn't question about them, where would they be? But instead, David, it's Liberty that jumps over Tulane when Tulane loses to SMU, future ACC school SMU. Liberty is going to play in a New Year's Six Bowl. The Flames are going to face Oregon, who only lost twice and both times to Washington, and both in fantastic football games. It wasn't like they got rolled over. That's the Fiesta Bowl on New Year's Day. Do we give the Flames a puncher's chance against Oregon in a New Year's Six Bowl?
No. I mean, and you've seen Liberty in person. I saw them in person Friday night in the Conference USA Championship game against New Mexico State. And Caden Salter was just awesome. I mean, he was slinging it and he was running, you know, he ran for $165, threw for over 300. He epitomized dual threat. But Dan Lanning, the Oregon coach, said last night that Bo Nix is all in on playing in the Fiesta Bowl, and Jamie Chadwell confessed when it was his turn to talk to us, he was disappointed to hear that news.
That's bad news. You kind of like we joked about, but with all the opt-outs, I think that's your hope for Liberty is that, you know, Nix and some other, but you know, Oregon, I mean, to me, you could make an argument for Oregon being one of the top four teams in the country as easily as you can Alabama. I mean, the only team that beat Oregon was Washington. Now, matchup wise, strength of schedule wise, but Oregon's real good.
Yes, real good.
I mean, they are our top four good, not the way it shook out for them, but tough matchup. But again, I think that's a huge moment for Liberty.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
You know, what would you like more, right? Would you want to go undefeated and play in some second rate bowl that you win? So you say, look at that. We had the undefeated season. That's special. Or you say, hey, we're 13 wins and maybe 13-1. We played in a Fiesta Bowl against Oregon. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's a bigger accomplishment. And who knows? You know, Salter is the kind of guy who can make a play or two to make a game more competitive than maybe it should be.
And again, with these bowls where the group of five is playing a power five, it's motivation. You know, the group of five team is going to be sky high. Is the power five team going to be? Maybe, maybe not. It's probably hard to tell. I do know that an 11 a.m. Mountain Standard Time kickoff on New Year's Day puts a damper on New Year's Eve for those attending the Fiesta Bowl.
David, puts a damper on me trying to watch that game. I mean, that part is not ideal. But I think the chance to have your program in a game of that magnitude is, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, all of those things, it's just a massive step for Liberty.
What a job by Jamie Chadwell, right?
Year one.
Yep.
And blending, you know, I talked to him about this and blending what he and his staff wanted to do offensively with what the previous staff under Hugh Freeze, what they had done offensively with what Caden Salter is capable of doing. It really, the way that offense came together really is a testament to good coaching because they had all of these pieces and all of these plans and all of these things. And sometimes, you know, sometimes less is more. They had all these parts. How are you going to Frankenstein it together? And really almost from the start, the vision they had for this offense, taking some of what they wanted to do, something what had been done, some things that they saw, and they've really put together an offense that's a lot of fun to watch.
It's no question there. It is, the entertainment value is through the roof.
Now there's one more bowl for Commonwealth schools. It's called the Famous Toastery Bowl. It will be played in Charlotte. David, it's better known or normally known as the Bahamas Bowl, and played in a much more exotic and exciting location. But Old Dominion, to get there under Ricky Ronnie, you know, to win at the end there, to become bowl eligible, they'll play Western Kentucky. I think that's a big step for the Monarchs and an accomplishment there as well.
Well, and the Monarchs playing their former Conference USA rival, Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky is where Old Dominion's athletic director, Wood Selig, was the AD before coming home to Norfolk. He's a Norfolk native. So there are many ties there. But the way Old Dominion became bowl eligible, Mike, in that season finale, you know, scoring a touch, or let me see if I get this in the right order. A field goal, a safety, and then a walk-off touchdown to score 11 points in the final, like, 2 minutes and change to overcome a 10-point deficit to get to 6-6 and get to bowl eligibility. That's a heck of a thing.
Yeah, and you love that because it's so easy at that point to pack it in, right? I mean, we talk about teams packing it in with 3 weeks to go. We talk about teams packing it in for the last game if you're down at halftime. But they're essentially out of the game, season over, with 2 minutes to play, and there's that level of fight to earn another game. So you talk about, you know, motivation in a bowl game. I would imagine that if that's how hard you played to get there, that, you know, this team will be up for a bowl again. Would it be nice to be in the Bahamas?
Yeah,
it would be nice for everyone to be in the Bahamas, but it is an intriguing matchup, and I think we'll get the best out of Old Dominion.
I agree with you, and the reason, Mike, that they've moved the game this season is because of the ongoing, you know, renovations down in the Bahamas from all the damage that's been done down there by Mother Nature. So that prompted the move up to Charlotte for this season.
Yeah, we've seen, you know, the same with the Maui Invitational playing on the Big Island after the fire in Maui. And although I would say going to Hawaii is still a pretty good deal. It's going to Charlotte. The difference between the Bahamas and Charlotte from Maui to the Big Island is a little bit different there. But while we bring that up real quickly with the basketball, we saw Virginia and Virginia Tech open their ACC schedules. David, I thought Virginia was really impressive against Syracuse.
Well, Mike, having seen them a couple nights earlier against Buzz and Texas A&M in the SEC Challenge, as locked in defensively as they were against A&M's backcourt, I thought Judah Mintz was in for a long day against UVA, Syracuse's number one scorer. He's coming off a 33-point game against LSU in the Challenge, and the Cavaliers locked him up.
Yeah, it was interesting hearing Adrian Autry talk about that and Tony Bennett and the idea of, you know, Reese Beekman, probably the best defensive player in the nation. I don't think that's hyperbole. But talking about the team defense, and Tony Bennett said it's not just Reese, it's us on Judah. And here's the thing, Reese can do it on his own. So with Reese playing in a defense that helps so well and moves so well and then helps and recovers so well, it really is a weapon. And you know, in some ways, David, and I don't mean this negatively, but it's a very typical Tony Bennett team. If they knock down their shots and they can get back and set on defense, they're really, really hard to play against. And if they're missing their shots and they're playing a lot of broken possessions where the pack isn't set and they're not in position to help, they're kind of an average team. And I know UVA fans are tired of hearing that and that sort of simplification, but it really is. I mean, Virginia is a top five team in the nation when their shots are going down because of how they can defend. And when they're not, they're, you know, somewhere in the top 25 probably, but not elite.
To quote our old friend Seth Greenberg, it's a make and miss game.
He's not wrong. There were many things maybe he was wrong on, but that wasn't one of them. So, yeah, props to Seth. How about Virginia Tech, Seth's old team? They get an ugly but important win over a Louisville program that I think is showing a little more fight and pluck than maybe we thought going into this year. What did you take away from the Hokies ACC opener?
Well, it's a game they couldn't lose, Mike. I mean, Louisville at home, and yes, Kenny Payne and the Cardinals, he has them playing better. Now, are they going to be upper half of the league? No. But, you know, they came. Your guy, Lynn Kidd, was awesome again.
Big
last
fan.
Time, I believe he had a career-high 13 shot attempts. made most of them as usual. And then MJ Collins, you know, just comes off the bench and gets them 20. You know, that's a huge lift and a game the Hokies had to have, because they were, you know, they had really played poorly in their previous two starts, having lost lost to Florida Atlantic in the final of the tournament down in Orlando, and then non-competitive really against Auburn.
Yeah.
In the challenge game. And the first score I saw driving home, or I guess it was while we were still at JPJ after the UVA A&M game, was Auburn was ahead 18-4.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, but it never really got that close where you thought Auburn was in trouble.
So David, you're better in tune with ACC meetings and those schedules. I want to end by asking you this. When's the next time that Boo Corrigan and the Florida State people end up in the same room? And what do you imagine that conversation is going to be like?
Boo Corrigan, the NC State AD, chairman of the CFP selection committee, Michael Alford, the FSU AD, they will all gather for the ACC winter meetings sometime during the basketball season. Be late January, early February, probably in Charlotte now. That's where they did the fall meetings, now that the conference offices moved there. Yeah, that'll be an interesting dynamic, won't it? I imagine there's been phone calls and texts already. And here's the thing, Mike, and we'll never know. At least I don't think we will. Did Boo Corrigan agree with the consensus?
Yeah.
That's the hard part of the chairman's job, because you have to stand there and listen to the questions from Reese Davis on live television,
which were very good.
Yes, they were. Reese Davis did a bang up job. And then even cutting to the chase on the SEC bias,
mm-hmm.
you know, Reese did not mess. And then, you know, then there's a media call afterward, and Boo has to rationalize, explain, defend a decision he may disagree with. You do not know.
It's interesting to me with something this contentious that he didn't give us not a wink, but some insight into, you know, a line as vague as, you know, certainly not everybody agree.
Yeah,
something along the lines of say, look, I wasn't, but you're right. I think to do that job properly, you have to come out and say, we were a team, we were a group, we were a committee. This is what we came up with, and this is what it is. Even though I think many of us, certainly many in ACC country, and I think many people who are looking at it from an unbiased standpoint think they did get it wrong. So, well, thanks for listening. You can subscribe to Teal and Barber on Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your favorite pods. And please consider supporting local journalism with an online subscription to the Times-Dispatch. You can find special promotional offers available at the website. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer and yours truly. Teal and Barber is a podcast of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening. Be healthy and safe. And please join David and me again next week.